Silverstone goes off script, but can anybody really catch the top? This is the Silverstone Review.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We're back once again to review the penultimate weekend of the season at Silverstone, which you were at.
I was, and can I just say,
it was dry.
It was dry. That's something that's normally quite down on Silverstone. There was a heck of a lot there this weekend. I have to say, there's a lot of free bits and pieces as well. I'm going to get to some of that in the Plato stuff we'll discuss in a moment.
Yep.
But actually, as a weekend, it was very good. It was emptier than I've seen Silverstone, I think it's fair to say. There was seats available in the grandstand, and quite a lot of seats available in the grandstand for every race.
It seemed a little bit spenny. When you sent me the price of the ticket, I thought, ooh,
I've heard reports as well it went up to 50 on the Friday night and on the gate, but I've not been able to verify that because I'd bought my tickets ahead of time. Well, I will say the programme was only a fiver, and it was a high quality programme with more, in my opinion, more interesting content in it than you get elsewhere.
I
was pleasantly surprised. I actually thought the racing was pretty good this weekend as well. If not at the front, there were some good battle packs in up the field, wasn't there, this weekend?
Just touring cars or support races as well? Because I know you've struggled with support races
I found a little bit, they were fine. I didn't watch them all perfectly because I met up with some friends and I met with another podcaster as well. So, I had a chat with him, met up with an old friend who was there as well this weekend. So I did do a little bit of socialising between races. The support I saw was fine. I didn't see any of the F4s.
There was a big incident in the Porsche. Yeah, Porsche sprint.
Very quickly, on that lap one of the Porsche sprint, he seemed to lose it all on his own on rear tyres and then flew off into the barrier at quite a lot of speed. And as soon as he hit the barrier of the car, went up on its roof. So a very quick red flag and a lengthy delay while they had to fix, obviously, and make sure the barriers were safe to race. That's being moved to Brands Hatch. So they're going to run that, presumably on the Saturday at Brands Hatch. Again, timetable allowing. That is the plan for that. But yeah, overall, a good weekend. A lot there. Getting out of the car park was a disgrace.
You also said you parked quite a long way.
I was wrong.
Oh, okay.
I was wrong. They put us behind Loughfield in that little grass area, which was that was fine.
That's not
but
too bad.
Again, just getting out. I don't understand why, as particularly at Silverstone, there was nobody there to just do a little bit of policing because
it's such a big expanse as well. You should think the infrastructure's there to do F1
weekends. I was about to say, how's they cope on F1 weekends? Because it took a good, 20 minutes by all accounts getting out of a race event isn't that bad. However, at Silverstone, you expect to get out pretty quickly and easily because there are so many exits, but there was no signs showing you where the exits were. So, anyway, that's that. That's Silverstone in a nutshell. I did have a good weekend or a good Sunday overall. Did you enjoy the sofa?
It wasn't too bad, actually.
Warmer than I was.
Yeah, I quite enjoyed the creature comforts at home. I was able to watch the F1 and some of the football alongside the racing at the weekend. So, it wasn't too bad.
Good stuff. Right, well, before we get into the actual review, there was some big news at the top of the programme on Sunday involving a certain Jason Plater.
Yeah, there was a little bit of speculation around what it may be because he was teasing bits and pieces on Twitter or X or whatever you call it nowadays about an announcement coming. And there were rumours, I think you heard rumours of possibly him either coming back to the series or coming back to even like a commentary role or something.
Well,
he
put a picture on social media of his old racing boots said,
yes,
how about we get these dusted off then? You immediately think, okay, he's going racing. Because obviously, since he left the grid some 3 years ago, I don't think he's done anything. If he has done stuff, it's been very sporadic and sparse. Yep. But obviously, there were some reasons for that. And just as a trigger warning, we are going to be discussing some topics around mental health, which obviously came out in the Plato interview. But he's coming back as a team owner, which I think is really exciting for the sport, actually, because this is somebody that I said to you in the text when you asked me about it.
Yep.
Because you very candidly asked, will Mr. Gow be happy about this? And I think he will, because this Plato gets bums on seats. It's as simple as that. He will get bums on seats. And there's also, if you're a documentary person, there's certainly a story in this, isn't there? Jason Plater returning to try and take a touring car team to ultimate glory.
Yeah, very much a story behind it. And I think he would like that narrative as well. Almost coming back, especially with what he went on to talk about in the interview that he had with Louise, what he's come back from to go into, it very much shows me that his life needs a purpose and that he wants to find his purpose once again within racing. And yes, it's not going to be necessarily, although he hasn't denied it yet, not going to be as a driver, but as a team owner.
He said he wouldn't be driving the car in the Louise interview. We shall see how long that goes on for. Obviously, at the minute, we've got no idea. For various reasons, he can't tell us the car, the drivers, anything that we do know that from his own words that he's looking to bring two huge sponsors. Yeah. I've never been in motorsport before. So if you've got shares in gin, that'd be my guess.
It sounded very much like it's going to be a two-car setup.
Yeah.
What cars they use, we don't know. It's looking like there's going to be further announcements with that towards the end of October. So once the season is all done and dusted with and the dust has settled. But there's certain rumours popping around already
within the paddock as to who
those drivers could well be.
Well, there's rumours today that I'm not going to go into about what cars he might have bought. I should talk to you off air on that. You've probably seen the same. But we're not going to get in the rumour mill here because there's so much. I think what's more important at this stage, if we focus on the actual other side of the player to interview, which is where this larger-than-life character who's always a bit happy-go-lucky admitted very openly to Louise that he had been struggling, hadn't left the house for 6 months. Obviously had suffered some problems in his personal life with marriage and TV work and stuff. And actually this weekend at Silverstone, there's a lot of mental health stuff around, so you could get your hair cut for free.
Yep.
It was called Start the Conversation.
Probably need that, don't I?
You should have probably come for that, yeah. I mean, to try and encourage people to get, go talk to the barber, etc. There's a men's mental health charity out there. And I think it is just always important to reiterate that if you are struggling with your mental health, and let's be honest, the world is at times a terrible place. We'll go tricky.
It's tricky at the moment.
That's more diplomatic. It's a tricky place to be. There is absolutely no shame in seeking help. I myself have gone through some mental health problems in the past, and I feel very able to talk about them now, having come out the other side. If you are struggling, there are a lot of charities out there. There's obviously your friends and family if you think you can talk to them. If you feel you can't talk to them, I'd say there's lots of charities. You've got Mind, you've got the Campaign Against Living Miserably, you've got Samaritans. There's a lot of places you can go for help. And if you are someone that's worried about somebody in your life who you think isn't quite doing all right, just ask if they're okay and make sure you ask again.
Yeah, always ask twice, because lots of men out there will always go, oh yeah, I'm fine. No worries.
And actually, I don't know if you probably haven't seen Brighton Hove Albion Football Club put out a fantastic video this weekend about, again, the Norwich and a couple of years ago with that scarf on the seat. Sadly, I mean, we can only talk as men. Men don't seem to talk about this enough. And all we can do is encourage that if you are struggling, regardless of your gender, but particularly if you're a man, because we tend to hide it the most, make sure that you don't bottle it up and you get the help that you need.
Yeah, it was interesting to see him speak so freely about the place that he'd got to. And as I said, I think this is very much a purpose for him going forward and something that he can concentrate or focus on. And sometimes that's something you need when you're having mental health struggles. I think it'll be good to see him back in the paddock
and in the stewards bus,
and it'll be interesting to see what team personnel he might bring with him, what drivers he's going to look to bring in, whether he's going to look to do a combination of young or old, what cars he's going to bring. Put your thoughts about that down in the comments, and obviously once the season is over, we will speculate a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll get more information, won't we,
bring you the news as soon as it breaks for that one.
Unless we're on holiday.
Because it's going to be a big one.
Unless one of us has a holiday booked in October, so you might be doing that solo.
That'll be fine, mate.
Right, should we actually jump into the action then on the Saturday, which is where qualifying happened, and there's a lot to get through this weekend, so we'll crack through it quite quickly. It was a qualifying session that had some rain attached to it, and we did see the title...
Drizzle.
It
certainly made the track slippery.
Yes, agreed.
But certainly not soaked.
Agreed. It was a difficult one for setup, and we saw both Dan Kamish and Tom Chilton fail post-ride height checks for their initial qualifying, their first session to get out of. They were disqualified from that and put back on the grid.
Yeah, so Chilton was actually disqualified for damage. He had his exhaust
on
the side running too low, whereas Kamish was a failure at the front.
Yep.
I know they run their cars close to the limit. Obviously, you can't account too much for Chilton's. He may have run over a curb or something like that, but you'd like to think a team like Napa, if you're going low at the front, you need to be within those restrictions.
It's difficult as well, because they'll be presumably going out on a wet setup with slick tires or a dry setup with wet tires, and we know that if the problem with the wet tires are, and it's the same in all motorsport, is that if the track isn't wet enough, they wear hella quickly. Yep. And that then naturally lowers the height of the car, so it's a tricky one, because we don't have an intermediate in touring cars, and it's this sort of thing that makes you think, well, perhaps it should be something that should be considered, maybe, because it wasn't wet enough for full wets, but it wasn't dry enough for full dry.
Or we go back to the era where you could have different on front and rear.
You know, for well, that's something that I'd absolutely like to be. We also saw that both Ingram and Sutton struggling in their respective sessions. They both didn't get into the top six shootout.
Both of them were actually putting that down to the Tokka Turbo boost that they get because of how many straights there are at Silverstone. It's a very speed orientated track, and they say this is where it's hurt them the absolute most.
There's only two breakings, isn't there? You've got the into Maggots and Becketts, and then you've got Luffield. The first corner, the first corner is flat or a lift off. It's not necessarily a braking zone.
And if not, you just run 16 miles wide anyway.
Exactly. Don't count. And as you say, you then got the Dorito that is the corners, and Dorito has three long straights. So it
does.
Yeah.
If it's not broken up in the packet.
Anyway, so in the end, Ingram rather could only get himself into 14. This gave Sutton a glimmer, maybe, which he unfortunately could not take, which was him finishing 12th. So in the end, Ingram probably got away with this one.
He seemed to really struggle in that second part of qualifying, did Sutton? And even when he was lapping towards the end, I thought one of these laps he's gonna put something in decent, but he was a long way off.
I think he struggled all weekend. The car just didn't seem to be there. And he did say, I think, throughout points of the weekend that this is the track they struggle with the most for some reason.
Yep.
Even when you think back to when they were dominating, they didn't take pole at this track. It was the only track they didn't take pole at. So on this particular occasion, it was Dowd and Leon who got his first pole of his career and his first pole of the season. Gordon Shedden, he's always good in these conditions. And he just, it's that head, it's that wise head that gets you through, finished second. Jake Hill, a really good effort with BMW in those conditions particularly.
BMW looked quite strong on Saturday, and I was quite surprised, especially with how well Moffitt and Rainford did as well, for them as a team.
Dan Lloyd in fourth. Josh Cook, who was running the new engine this weekend, so only Buxton running the old one, finished in fifth. And Proctor, sixth. A little bit disappointing, maybe, because he's very good at getting into the top six, and then doesn't really do anything when he's there, kind of thing. Perhaps a little bit harsh, but I think once you see him and was preconditioned to think the Hyundai is so good that you just expect it to be on the front row, and again, it wasn't.
Yep.
So, right, that pretty much sums up the somehow Nick Cowsett started at the back of the grid. I'm not entirely sure how, because
they're on split sessions. You have one session start on one side of the grid at the back, and the other session start on the other side.
Even though Camish and
because they got excluded from their session, they were at the back of their session. Okay.
Only of the session, not of the grid. Yes. Right.
And then the order between Chilton and Camish was decided by how they finished in FP2.
Yes, where they I'd heard that. Yeah, I'd heard that bit, but I couldn't work out.
Yeah, because they split them side to side, I was a little confused by it, because if you get excluded from a session, I believe you should be on the back.
Well, that's exactly. Yeah.
Yes, that's just how they do it, unfortunately.
All right, well. Fair enough. That clears it up. Thank you for doing some research.
Moving on to race one then. So we had mediums and soft tyres this weekend. You had to run two mediums and one soft. So the soft was the optimal tyre this weekend.
Which I actually prefer.
Do you?
I think because it just means that you don't... Okay, and on the one hand, you potentially waste your soft if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I think it just means that you don't necessarily ruin your race straight by finishing first or third, or because not even behind you can just stick on soft, because they're going to have to be a bit more tactical when they run the soft. So if we're going to have to do this, I kind of prefer it this way.
Okay.
In a weird way, I thought the racing was way better this weekend, because people on the medium, or hard if you want to call it, didn't just tumble straight back, and people on the soft didn't just go forward. We'll get to race three.
I think it was a combination of that and being not a soft to hard.
Yeah, I think that probably made a big difference as well. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think perhaps, sorry to hold you up even further, but it wasn't warm this weekend, so I wonder if that made a big difference as well, because it was much harder to get the soft into the operation, the optimum window, because of the track temp.
So for the start of race one, we had Rowbottom being the first driver on the medium tyre. All of row five were on the mediums, and crucially Sutton and Ingram both started on the medium tyre.
Makes sense.
Lloyd managed to get sort of like pretty much the best start of those.
A really good start. Got away like a scolded cat.
Managed to get Jake Hill down into Becketts on the brakes, whereas Aaron Taylor-Smith had a poor start and nearly squeezed Sutton into the pit wall.
It came very close.
It was really close. I'm pretty sure there was a wing mirror that came off with how close it was.
So Sutton don't need that.
Shedden had a decent start as well. He managed to get a good run out of the final corner to lead over the line for the first lap. And then De Leon locked up into Beckett's and dropped down to fifth.
It was a really poor, poor start. And just,
it was.
I mean, I think Cook alluded, not Cook, Hill, sorry, alluded to it after they just got the tyre strategy completely wrong and how to look after them. But
we know that the BMW struggle really early on in a race.
And it was cold that first race. It was cold. Was,
yeah. And the front wheel drives are just able to take that little edge out at the start of the race. But De Leon, yeah, didn't balance it well and gradually fell through the field, even though he's supposed to be on this, quite optimum tyre.
And eventually gave himself a puncture as well, which I'm sure we'll get to.
Yes. Lloyd then managed to lead into Luffield, coming onto between lap 2 and 3, managed to get a good run, take Shevin, and...
It's a good move.
Didn't really look back. He looked really strong, really confident as well.
Yeah, I think if we didn't have what happened later, it would have been a different story. That's not to take anything away from Lloyd, but I think what I quite liked about this race as well is there's a lot of strategy being played. Yes. He got past, I think, on the boost, and then Shedden had a plan for how to deal with that later in the race, which he couldn't get to, as we'll cover in a moment.
Sutton was up to 9th at this point, and Ingram up to 11th by the end of lap 3. And then Ingram managed to get ahead of Sutton coming into, I think, Brooklyn's lap 4.
I have to say, this is an Ingram that we haven't seen enough of, in my opinion, which was a bit spicy. A bit spicy. That was a Sutton move in many ways. It was. The door is a little bit open, and I'm going to make it open even more.
Yeah, we saw Sutton make some good moves this weekend down into Brooklyn's with some nice late-breaking moves, but it's certainly an edge-the-door-open kind of move.
Perfectly clean, perfectly fair in touring car terms, absolutely. But yeah, that's a sort of move that we've been saying Ingram has been avoiding a little bit, and that was quite interesting to see with the lead he's got that he was taking that chance.
Yeah, it almost felt like he wanted to guarantee as many points this weekend, almost with the anticipation that he could well struggle at Brands.
Well, also, I think they'll know that Napa don't go well. I mean, it's relative, obviously, but they'll know that Napa struggle here overall. And he'll know that if he wants to give himself the best possible opportunity at Brands, and he did struggle at Brands last year, don't forget in race 3 where the car was nowhere.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense that he... And also, it wasn't raining as was forecast. Brands Hatch, there's normally rain somewhere in that weekend, which adds a bit of unpredictability. So, yeah, it makes sense to make hay while the sun was shining.
Yeah, all of that followed a battle with the two of them with Charles Rainford, but Ingram did manage to come out on top. And, yeah, you said De Leon struggling on tyres, down to 8th by the end of lap 6. And considering where he started in a BMW, you thought he would have gone off into the distance and managed to take this win quite comfortably.
Well, at least lead the opening half of the race and then maybe get reeled back in as the race went on. But, yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting to fall through the field like this.
Kamish, following his exclusion from qualifying, was really struggling to make progress.
Yeah, he was,
and only managed to get up to 16th by lap 8. And I don't know... He was on the same tyres as many of the cars around him, and being in a Napa, I would have thought he would have made more progress than he
agreed,
did.
Agreed.
Especially seeing what Sutton then went on to do in race 2.
Yeah, and as I know I moan about Silverstone being boring and stuff, but there was overtaking opportunities this weekend. There's a lot of movements being done through Max and Beckett's. There's a lot of movements being done through Brooklands and then through the Luffield section.
Yep.
Cops not so much this weekend, but there was overtaking opportunities this weekend, and I'm with you. I'm surprised Carriage didn't side through the field a bit more effectively.
Ingram had his own textbook move this weekend, that cutback coming out of Beckett's and getting that drag down the long way.
The Giovinardi line, yes. Return to the Giovinardi line, which is nice to see.
And I think it was a combination of being able to get that Hyundai straight as possible, as quick as possible, so you can get that Hyundai power down, but also I think he used boost coming out there quite often just to make sure he got the pass done, which is what he did on De Leon.
What's your thought on the boost? Because for me this weekend, it was too powerful.
Too powerful?
I think there's an incident in race 2, which I will get to, where Sutton was on the back of Ingram and then Ingram's boosted and the gap just
went out like
massive.
8 tenths.
And I just thought that it was too easy to pass before the corner. You just drove round. I think Hill got driven round by Lloyd on the boost at one point where you just literally just put the foot down and you're gone. I just found it too powerful this weekend.
I do think this weekend it certainly showed how powerful it is.
Yes, I agree.
And if you equate it to F1 and DRS, we do have those DRS zones, especially where they were this weekend at Baku. It only comes halfway down the straight for where you can use it.
Yeah, that might be a way.
And it might be a way of actually allowing drivers to be able to get alongside to make the move, but still have to do it under brakes.
Yeah, because to go back a point and defend Cambridge a little bit, yes, he was struggling to make progress, but everyone in front of him had so much more boost than him, and that straight in particular, the Wellington straight, it was so powerful on there that if you were the carve out boost, you were snookered. I'll try to think of a polite way of putting it.
Sutton managed to get past De Leon two laps later. And at this point, Rowbottom was actually really struggling on the medium tyre and getting caught by Ingram quite quickly.
Yep.
Bearing in mind they were on the same tyre. Yeah, Ingram was just going for as many points as he could.
Absolutely.
Especially in race one. He managed to get past Rowbottom, and there wasn't much of a defence, was there?
Disappointed with Rowbottom. I mean, look, I'm not expecting Rowbottom to yeet him into Kettering-shire. That would be...
No, but he could put up a Perez kind of defence.
Yeah, you think back to that famous race, and obviously... we'll take the controversy out of it. The reason that Max was ever able to do it in the first place is because Perez held Hamilton up for 12 seconds.
Ridiculous.
And gave Max the chance to get back into the window. Yes, we won't discuss what happened after that. Yep. But without that interaction from Perez, it doesn't matter anyway. And yeah, he was kind of like a, here you go, mate.
Yeah.
Roll out the red carpet. On your way, mate.
Not quite as brash as the one where he let Sutton through as well, putting the indicator on.
No, but bearing in mind that he knocked Sutton off the circuit at Donington, I'm not suggesting he should be knocking people off the circuit. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that I'm amazed that it was as easy a pass and it was done in one corner rather than having to follow him for a couple of corners and do it a lap later, etc.
Out front at that point, everything was fairly calm, although Hill did start to push on lap 15 to close the gap, and this was just a case of balancing off hybrid between each other.
Toker boost.
And once Hill got a little bit closer, Lloyd was then able to deploy his because he had more of an allocation. Chilton half-spun double at Loughfield.
The first of it. Move that really annoyed me.
There were
weekend.
A couple of moves from him this weekend that were optimistic to say the least.
Lazy, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. And that ruined Doble's race as well.
Yeah, he got pushed out of the points and eventually had to come into the pits because of it. I'm assuming something got bent at the rear.
Yeah. The move was never on. I was sat at Loughfield. The move was never on, ever. I know that Harvey said, they like to cut across the inside of that curve. Mm. Yeah, that's fine. But there wasn't even half a curb.
A car there.
There wasn't a curb to cut across because Doble's car was there. Yeah, I'm amazing a sketch penalty for that as well.
Yeah, agreed. And then the race finally came to life and we had a fire.
Yes.
A very substantial fire. Coming down into Beckett's, there was smoke coming from the underside, near side underside of Hamilton's Cupra. As he came back round onto the Wellington Straight, there was a significant amount of flames coming from the other side, and he actually pulled up on the left-hand side midway down the straight just to try and get the car stopped quickly as possible to get out as quickly as possible. And then the car just went up.
Yeah, so obviously I couldn't see the car from where
just
I was.
Saw the smoke.
But I tell you what, you saw the smoke and
it
then
was black, wasn't it?
So yeah, obviously it started white and then within seconds it had gone black, acrid, thick. You could smell it in the grandstand. And obviously at that point you can't see it. And quite rightly, the TV director's cut away from it. And you naturally fear the worst because, we've seen how quickly fire can take over a car.
Yes, definitely.
And obviously, you have to get past the extraction test to be able to race in the first place. Yep. However, doing that in a controlled setting where there's not fire compared to when there is, I think Nick does it incredibly well to get out as quickly as he does.
Yeah, credit to him. He had an interview with Louise later on in the day, and he said he was actually fairly calm in that situation.
Yes, yes.
He knew what he had to do. He knew how to best use his body to be able to get out of the car. Obviously being less able than the other drivers, he still has to adhere to the extraction test that every other driver has to do, and he's able to pass those because he's able to race.
And just on that as well, I know a lot of people only watch the races and don't necessarily watch all the gumph in between, but there's a really good segment with Nick Hamilton this weekend about what he has to go through for a race, what he has to go through to get here. And I think certainly some keyboard warriors who think he's only on the grid because Lewis Hamilton is his relation would do well to watch that video because it was an incredibly moving and inspirational piece to camera done by Jane Edwards as well.
Jane Edwards.
I nearly called that by mistake then. Obviously, it was a former teammate of his and he looks back at the Donington Park Ridge at the points and stuff, but also just how much pain he puts his body through a weekend to do this. And I think that, it's well worth a watch. I think it's about 15 minutes or so. It's definitely worth a watch and catch up if you didn't see it on the day.
He certainly races for the love of it.
Absolutely.
Chilton compounded his issues, had a puncture on lap 18.
It's a hell of a spin.
It is a hell
of
a spin.
Out of nowhere as well.
Twice as well. He has two goes at it. A rear puncture, so I don't think it was as a result of the contact with Mikey.
Agreed.
But that put an end to his race and probably I don't want to say it, but probably why he didn't get a penalty anyway.
I agree with you. I think that's the same in race two as well, which we'll get to, which is a nonsense if that is the case. But
yeah,
I don't know how he avoided that. Also, actually, I think you missed it in this race where Sutton punted Moffat quite hard through Brooklyn. So I'm surprised he got away with that. That was, in my mind, a push to pass.
Doesn't bother me.
But as somebody who, you know, sometimes can be accused maybe of overlooking some of Sutton's more aggressive stuff, I was unhappy with that personally, watching it back, thinking that was a little bit over the edge for me. And I'm surprised that, again, I don't think we'll see a clearer push to pass all season. I'm surprised he got away with it.
So, safety car was called out due to the fire underneath Hamilton's car. They did struggle at first to get it under control, and they had three fire trucks go out to it.
Do you think it should be red flagged? I mean, I don't know about this podcast a year long, but I'm surprised it was. I mean, in hindsight, it was fine, but I'm surprised it wasn't red flagged.
At first, you don't know. You can't necessarily work out how serious it is.
So red flag it and worry about it later. That, in my mind, that's where I go. If you don't, this is the worst thing that can happen on a race circuit is a fire. That's the worst thing that can happen in a car, is that it's on fire.
I would disagree.
Okay.
I would say if a driver can't get out of a car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, obviously, but
doesn't matter whether there's fire or not. That is a more extenuating circumstance that would cause a race to be red flagged. But the fact that Nick had got out, and then it was just the car that they had to get under control. They had to get the fire crews out, which they did in as quickly as they could.
But they could have done it quicker if the circuit was completely neutralised, arguably.
Possibly, but...
But what also...
If you do that, and then the car's got under control and you're able to clear it within a lap or two, then you've got the other argument of, oh, why was the race stopped?
Yeah, I get that. But on the flip side, I'm thinking to myself that if this had been at the exit of Brooklands and he's in the gravel, I'd say, yeah, okay, you can carry on as it's going. It was quite close to the racing circuit, and it was windy, it was cold.
Yeah.
All it takes is the wind to blow onto the cars that are coming past. They're still going to be popping the flames from the exhaust and stuff. You could have seen that. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. You could have seen another car go up as it went past it. I'm just saying, I don't think you can categorically say that would not have happened.
I'm just
surprised.
The way they were able to get marshals to the vehicle and be able to have marshals there with extinguishers and then bring the fire trucks out, which had further extinguishers, they were able to control it at that time.
But not immediately. The cars went past it on fire, at least a lap, if not two. So I'm just thinking, in hindsight, with knowing what we know...
The car was cool pretty quickly.
Yeah, but knowing what we know at the end of it, when nobody else got hurt and it was all fine, we can go, yeah, it was the right call. But I'm surprised that the second you see a car that close to the circuit on fire, that badly on fire, you don't just red flag it. I'm surprised the immediate call isn't red flag it. We'll worry about the fallout later. If we have to defend why we red flagged it later, so be it. I'm just surprised, that's all. I don't think it was the wrong decision because nothing bad happened afterwards, but I'm just surprised. I'm starting to wonder what actually is a red flag in the touring cars, because I don't want to see races red flagged either. Let's get that right. I don't want to see races as red flag. But the second that Porsche had gone upside down after hitting the barrier, it was red flagged pretty much straight away.
Yeah.
And to me, the driver was out of that really quickly. That's a less... And I know they've got to do the barrier damage and such, but that's a less serious incident than what we've seen there.
That tends to be, at the moment, what does cause a red flag within the touring cars if there is barrier damage and there is going to be a substantial amount of time. I can see in this instance, they thought they may well be able to get the car under control and then get it moved within that safety car period. At this point, they still had, I think, four laps till the end of the race.
Plus three
would have been added on. So they eventually... The race finished under safety car conditions.
Which is another argument for me, because, it was under the safety car, but it took him over seven laps to do it. Surely you red flagged the race, get it done, and then restart the race so you can actually have racing laps.
I think what they would have hoped for is to get it done within those three. But once you go past that point...
Red flag it then.
Yeah, but then you don't get...
Yeah, I suppose you're probably too far into race distance anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, and I'm not criticising necessarily the direction that it went. I'm just personally surprised that we didn't see the red for it, given the ferocity of the fire as well. It wasn't just a little fire.
No, it was fairly substantial.
Yeah.
During this race, Smiley had a turbo issue and really struggled to make progress.
Was that the reason?
Right. Yeah, I think you mentioned it on the grid for race two.
Oh, I skipped those bits.
But he didn't have an overall great weekend anyway, considering what Lloyd was up to.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, as I said, safety car finish, seven laps, meaning that I got the point for the predictions later on.
Yeah.
all done and dusted in the first race, unfortunately. But yeah, that's how they finished.
Yep, so it was Dan Lloyd in first from Jake Hill. Gorn Shedden will be happy with the podium. He had saved a load of boost for the end of the race, but was obviously unable to use it. I'm slightly disappointed because that would have been a better way to finish the race, obviously. But look, that's for all three of those drivers, they are amazing results. Senna Proctor in fourth, Josh Cook fifth. Again, that new engine helped him out. Just to say as well, he has been given a 10-point penalty for the new engine change. That is the only penalty from
fairly
the week.
Standard.
Yeah, that is the only penalty from the weekend to bring to you. Adam Moffat, really solid result in sixth. Tom Ingram in seventh. Crucially ahead of Sutton in eighth. Dan Rowbottom in ninth. Morgan rounding out the top ten of Aaron Taylor-Smith, Dan Camish, Darrell DeLeon, Charles Rainford and Chris Smiley making up the points-paying positions.
Yeah.
Should we move on to race number two now then? I'll just need to get my notes because I came back and diligently because I just love the podcast and love the listeners so much. Watched all the races and made notes for race two.
Because, I had notes for all of them though.
Yeah, yeah.
But which makes a change.
It does make a change. And did you enjoy it? You must feel so much happier. And
do you know what? Watching it live and trying to make notes was quite difficult. Mm-hmm. Especially watching it on my own, because at least if we're watching it together and I'm making notes, you can point out bits that I might have missed.
Yeah.
So watching it on my own and trying to make notes was probably the trickiest bit, but yeah.
Very good. Right, race two, then we'll rattle through this because I can't believe we're already at half hour point, but there's been a lot to talk about. So the highest soft car on this race was Tom Ingram. Sutton went for medium, which was against the advice of the team.
Very much against the advice of the team. And he was very much like, just trust me on this one. Let me try it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's the kind of driver that you go, oh yeah, all right then.
Absolutely. Camish, if he walked into a market that sold luck, he'd come away empty-handed because he was into the pits with an issue at the end of lap one. Just a weekend, dare I say, a season to forget for Camish. I'm going to come to that a bit later on.
Certainly a weekend to forget for him.
It's not been particularly strong, has it? Hill off the line very well and was able to get into first at Beckett's with a decent move on the brakes on Dan Lloyd. Fairly standard stuff. BMW's good in its first lap. Ingram was into third by Luffield. I was in absolute spaceship mode.
It was ridiculous how much progress he made on that first lap.
He just passed every car.
Cut through everyone. And
Yeah, and Ingram was then into second and then into first. I mean, Hill did at least put up a bit of a fight, which was nice for him to succeed. He did try and make it difficult. But, I mean, the tyre offset, the boost offset, the car offset,
Sutton did try to follow him through, and certainly on that, managed to get up to fifth position. But I found that Lloyd struggled quite early on that medium tyre.
Yeah, I think lack of the boost. What do you do when you see?
Combination.
Yeah, when you see Ingram coming as well. it's difficult because obviously he's there to fight for himself with his own sponsors, but equally don't upset the team you buy the car from either. Yep. So it's a little bit of that. Although I don't think he made it as, it wasn't an indicator pass, put it that way.
No, certainly not.
But also, why would you bother wasting your fight and your race fighting someone that's clearly going to finish ahead of you anyway? We see it in F1 all the time. It's not your fight. Let them through kind of thing.
The Ingram pass on here was very a classic boost pass down Wellington Straight.
I've written a very dull pass, just drives by. For me, it just highlights how strong it was this weekend.
More traction, more boost, and he didn't really fight it too much at the end.
Sutton kind of woke up a little bit and realised that if he wanted to keep the championship going, he was going to have to do a few moves. And you said about Ingram having a trademark move.
Yes.
Sutton had one as well, which was to lunge as late as possible into Brooklands. Under control, I have to say. It was a very max.
I don't think I ever saw him out of control into there.
Very Danny Ricciardo style, lick the stamp and send it and last the late breakers. But a very good pass on Lloyd. I think it's fair to say probably caught him napping. And then on lap eight,
Very
good. On lap eight, we saw for the second time this weekend a daft move at Luffield by Chilton. Damaged suspension of his car.
Daft is one way to put it, yeah.
Charged dive up the inside, got it wrong, collapsed suspension. Very, very avoidable.
It turns out the back of that BMW is quite strong because it was Rainford that he ran into.
Yeah. Ran into, yes.
Crashed, ran, however you want to phrase it.
Launched.
But yes, first contact broke the suspension and then he thought he'd have a little nibble when he can actually steer anywhere as well.
I will say he took it in good grace. He came in front of the grandstand and did a bow in front of us, so that was quite good. Good sport. But, I mean, for a driver of that calibre, and actually I said to my partner who was with me this weekend, not you, my other partner. That... In my view, this is why he has never been a touring car champion, because he just lacks that clever bit of racecraft that
finesse.
Sutton and Ingram don't make that move.
No, they wait.
And that, I think that's why Turkington doesn't make that move.
No, Turkington didn't make any move.
Matt Neal did, but I mean, he had a tank, so it didn't really count. And Plato made that move, which is why he didn't win as much as he probably should have done.
Yeah. Rainford was actually in a battle with Morgan and Moffitt before that, down into Beckett's, and then Morgan managed to boost back past them as well.
Yeah, to recover the car, we needed a safety car, which only a couple of laps, and on the restart, a very good and controlled restart from Ingram, as you'd expect. It did give Ash the chance to sort of go after Hill, though, which is what he needed. Cause I have to say, I'm not sure he was getting to Hill without the safety car.
Possibly not.
So that gave him the chance to catch up, and we saw again his trademark move, which he needs to pull. Morgan on the restart managed to run into the back of his own teammate.
Run into your teammate.
He did a damn robot. Hang on. and he flipped his bonnet up. I always love it when that happens. It's always good fun, isn't it? Here he came in.
Did you see how hard the mechanics were really trying to work to pull that pin straight?
I also loved
to get the bonnet back down.
I think it was Sam Richards. If it wasn't, it was somebody from Tokyo just sort of leaning over, watching everything. Just enjoyed that immensely.
No, it's not good enough yet.
Yeah. No, come on. Very, very good indeed.
Plenty of gaffer tape as well.
Absolutely. The safety car brought Aaron Taylor Smith into contention as well. He was on soft tyres, and he was the next in that group on the soft.
Do you know what? My notes for this saying he just quietly crept up through the field.
Went for his business.
Didn't do anything rash or anything out of the ordinary. He just made up places.
Agreed. On lap 16, Sutton got past Hill, as I say, of that late lunge into Brooklands. Again, a fair late lunge, no problems with that at all. And Osborne went for a little bit of Tokyo drifting after De Leon decided that he wanted to sideswipe him into Ketteringshire. Good car control. And actually, Osborne, I think, we'll get to it, had another good weekend where he showed good car control, good racecraft, and quietly went about his business. Smiley's interesting weekend continued. 10-second penalty for track limit violations.
One of many. And Ingram actually got a warning in this race. He got a black and white flag. And he was sort of like right on the limit in a race where he didn't need to be as well.
It reminded me a little bit of, do you remember the Max Verstappen when he was on it? He goes, what's the fastest lap? It doesn't matter, Max. It was a new set of softs. Yep. Leave it, mate. And then he goes and sets the fastest lap. All right, Max, calm down now. Yeah, very much.
I don't know whether it's because of the contact as well, but Proctor managed to drop all the way back to 17th.
Yes, he didn't have a particularly good race either. Rowbottom then on lap 23 had a problem with his car and had to retire, so another poor weekend just for Napa generally at Silverstone. They're just cursed here. And then Aaron Taylor Smith would finish eventually in fourth. I've got here that one more lap and he's on the podium because he had caught Hill at the end of that.
He was on the podium. He was looking really sharp, really quick. And as you say, there were other penalties that were bought out. So Smiley, Proctor and Patterson.
Patterson as well, did he? Right.
All got penalties for track limits towards the end of the race, which actually meant that Buxton got promoted into the points, as did Halstead.
Halstead got a point?
Halstead got 14th, I believe.
I wondered why Wow. There you go. Very good indeed. In the end, it was a very comfortable victory for Tom Ingram from Ash Sutton from Jake Hill. I say Aaron Taylor Smith, good drive from him, siphoning through the field, getting himself into fourth. Charles Rainford, a quiet fifth. It kind of shocked me when I read, Rainford is fifth.
He was also on a soft tyre,
I believe. Yeah, but one of those, again, quietly went about his business and did the job well. Lloyd, I think, did well to hold himself in sixth on the medium tyre.
Yes.
Did well there. Again, Shedden did very well to hold seventh. Moffat in eighth. Good weekend for him overall, I have to say. Josh Cook ninth. Darrell Leon rounding out the top ten with Mikey Doble, Sam Osborne, Max Buxton, Nick Houghton and Chris Smiley all taking points as well. The championship is... I've written here, it's done with that win from Ingram. It's done. it is done. And then number 12 was pulled from the fish bowl, which promoted Sam Osborne on to pole.
Yeah, and we'll get on to race 3 after this short break.
Life, like touring cars, moves fast. It can be hard to keep on top of everything you need to be on top of. That's why, if you want to stay on top of your touring car news, the best way to do so is...
Make sure you subscribe down below and get the bell on if you're on YouTube. Subscribe to all our podcast platforms, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. And don't forget, we're also on social media on Facebook, Instagram and TikTok. Make sure you subscribe over there because we have plenty of discussions about everything that goes on during the season. And as we're coming to the end of the season now, let us know your thoughts and ideas of any videos you'd like us to look into or drivers that you'd like us to explore more about.
Back to the show.
Right then, race three. It's been a long one so far, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a lot happened this weekend.
Yeah, and even more happened before the start of race three. As you said, Osborne took pole position with a reverse grid with Mikey Doble on the front row. However, De Leon from the second row came to the grid with an issue.
It's a fairly large issue, yes.
An issue that he had not felt before.
Which stunned me when you found out what the issue was.
yes, true.
Because he thought he was playing it very cool on camera.
So it turns out that the BMW sounded like it had a broken drive shaft on the way to the grid. So they were trying to work as ferociously as they could on the grid to get this sorted before the start of the race. Unfortunately, they ran out of time and he had to push the car from the grid. Though that caused more issues than it probably should have done.
Yeah, it got stuck on a lip on the side of the circuit.
They did manage to get the cars all off onto their formation lap while the BMW mechanics tried to get the car sorted. And he did actually make it out, I think, a couple of laps after the race started.
What was quite interesting is that Dick Bennett, who's the WSR team principal, was the... what do you call it, a delivery person for tools. He was going between the other cars on the grid, the other WSR cars, delivering tools to De Leon's car to try and get it up and running, which is always good to see. And he did say on the grid that he wasn't even aware of the issue. He was in a meeting. I wonder who that was with. And then came out onto the circuit to find out that this was a problem. So he immediately started to become the courier for tools between the other teams on the other BMWs on the grid.
Yes, and that's not where the issue stopped for De Leon. He actually got given a 30-second penalty because it was either for having people working on the car too late on the grid, or it was because he went through a red light at the end of the pit lane. I wasn't quite sure.
No, I mean, 30 seconds...
it's a lot.
It's a lot. Normally, it's a drive-through, isn't it, for being late off the grid. So maybe it was a...
quite possibly.
Or maybe they just combined the two. I have to say, I hate the fact that if you're late work on the grid, you get such a large penalty compared to you can basically take the mickey out of track limits all weekend and get a 5-second penalty or 10-second penalty.
Yeah, or a jumper start.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You can jump start and be fine. It's drive-through for jumper start, isn't it? It's an F1 you get.
That's true.
It's no fun with Piastri can jump the start and get a 5-second penalty, which doesn't matter because he eats it into a wall, but yeah.
That's apparently going to be carried over to
the race. No, it's not, because it's under 10 seconds.
Oh.
That's what the P1 boys were saying today, is that anything under 10 doesn't get carried over.
Okay, fair enough. There were a significant amount of drivers on soft tyres for this race, including Osborne on the front row. Sutton would use his soft tyre in this race as well, as Buxton, Housted, Rowbottom, Camish, Patson, Morgan and Chilton, a lot of which were at the back of the grid looking to make good progress to come through the field. Rainford made a good start to the race. And
of course he did. We didn't back him this weekend.
Yeah, I know. That's typical, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done, by the way. Lloyd was assisted off, shall I say,
assisted
at Beckett's, courtesy of, I believe, two Toyotas.
It looked Aaron Taylor Smithy to me.
It looked like someone got into Aaron Taylor Smith, but I think it might have been Sheddon. Cook.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Sheddon.
I think it was one of them.
Cook was further up, wasn't he? Because he finished second in the end. So I think it was
Honestly, can't remember.
Anyway.
But yes, two Toyotas assisted Lloyd off exit stage left quite quickly.
He's not allowed to have a good weekend where he gets three strong points finishes. That's not allowed.
But... which consequently meant that Hill, Sutton and Ingram all made up five places on the opening lap.
Yep.
In other news, Housted went into the pits. Osborne, by this point, had a good lead, and Moffitt was challenging Mikey Doble.
I have to say, given that your prediction was that Doble podium and what I put on the line...
You were worried, weren't you?
I hadn't really clocked that he was on the second row until they came to the grid.
He was
like,
on the front row.
I hadn't really clocked that until they were on the formation. I said to Nadia... oh dear. And then I was like, what tyre is he on?
I thought, when they were going to the grid, has he used his stuff? He hasn't used his stuff.
I bet you were at that point.
Yeah, I was slightly disappointed to find out that he was on a medium tyre.
I've never cheered so loud when Moffitt got through.
He did fall back through the field. Yes, he did, yes. Moffitt getting in first of all, and then Sutton, and then Hill. Sheddon and Aaron Taylor-Smith had also fallen through the field. They were on a medium tyre and seemed... that Toyota seemed to really struggle on the medium tyre this weekend.
In that race in particular, yes. Well, you say that, but Cook was on medium and he got a podium. So
yeah.
I think they just struggled in the pack a little bit this week when they got back there, yeah.
By lap 7, Sutton was up to third, looking quite good, quite racy. Ingram and Hill had a really good fight, which Rowbottom then also joined in on, being on that soft tyre. and they all sort of like shuffled themselves about, and Ingram came out worst.
For a
little while. Hill managed to get back through on Row Bottom because he'd managed to overtake both of them where they both run wide. But yeah.
Yeah, it was going to be very bright. I mean, it was sort of Ingram and, you say, Hill battling, ran a little bit wide, and Ingram, Row Bottom sort of just popped himself through, which a good opportunistic move.
Yeah. Osborne, Cook was closing in, but at no point did I feel like Osborne had to go majorly defensive.
No, agreed. Like he just drove a very good race. Lap after lap, he just put in good, sensible laps where he didn't really make any performance mistakes.
Both of them were doing a couple of lockups. I don't know, it was an unloaded rear wheel into Beckett's.
I think cold as well. I think part of it will be cold tyres, because there's a lot of lockups or smoke, should we say, through that part of the circuit.
But Cook was slowly closing in, and you could definitely see the laps where Cook had used TTB compared to where Osborne was using it as well. Ingram finally got past Row Bottom as Row Bottom ran out of his TTB, and it really did hamper him. He made no more progress after that and actually started falling back.
Did, yeah.
And then that was finally compounded by a 10-second penalty for track limits for Row Bottom. In a weekend, he probably wants to forget, especially with how close and how quickly Hill has managed to catch both him and Cammy.
Hill, I think, will get third in the championship here, which I think will be a hammer blow.
Considering
that Hill has missed a weekend,
and
Napa and BMW, let's be honest, have been dreadful for certainly two or three of the rounds.
Yes.
I think if Hill gets third,
Cook did make a mistake, though, on lap 20 at Loughfield. He managed to lock up, run wide, which then let Osborne get away, basically. And once Osborne saw this opportunity, made the most of it, he had enough boost left, and he was able to almost extend that lead towards the end. Moffitt finally had a lock up, which let Hill come through. And then more penalties towards the end of the race, again for Shedden and Proctor. Just one lap from the end. You think it's not worth it, really, considering how much time gets added on in a touring car race. That drops you a hell of a long way back.
It does. It does.
But yeah, an Osborne win.
Yes. A really well taken win as well. It wasn't like he lucked his way into it.
No.
We've seen him have pole before in a reverse grid race, and by lap, at the end of lap one, he's
fallen through the field.
Exactly. This was commanding. He really did. As you said, at no point looked under any real pressure.
He's always looked a lot more comfortable at Silverstone.
Yes, agreed.
I think it's a track that he enjoys, but it's not necessarily a track that the Napa car goes well at.
No.
But yeah, he looked really competent in this win, and yeah, credit to him.
Absolutely. So as you say, Osborne took the win from Cook, who was on the medium tyre. Mm. So good to see that was competitive
really
in seconds.
Really competitive from Cook.
Good. It's a good third from Ash, but it's a bad third as far as he was on the soft tyre, and he never got close to them. And in some ways, I'm glad he didn't, because...
Do you think Cook would have let him through?
No, I'm thinking, what would they do about Osborne? Do you take his first win off him for Sutton?
Yeah, true.
So in a way, I'm glad he didn't get there, because what a horrible... And I think Napa are a little bit more ruthless in virtue, and I think they would have potentially...
Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, we'll never know.
But your dad's the owner...
But do you want the title? Basically, nobody wins out of that, do they? Nobody wins. No, nobody wins out of it. So, in some ways, I'm glad Sutton wasn't able to get there. But I'm surprised that he wasn't. And let's be honest, he never put any pressure on Cook at all.
He didn't.
Cook was able to sort of drive a really aggressive race on the medium tyre. Jake Hill, fourth. Really good weekend from him. Ingram, fifth. Just doing what he needs to do, isn't he?
Yep.
Moffat, sixth. So that's three
really
very
nice
good finishes. Yeah. Yep. Did really well indeed. Adam Morgan, good recovery from obviously race two to get into seventh. Tom Chilton, eighth, scoring some points. Camish in ninth. Again, good recovery drive from the back of the grid. Mikey Doble finishing in tenth with Aaron Taylor Smith, Rainford, Proctor, Rowbottom, and Patterson making up the points paying positions, which was good for them.
We'll get into our awards first of all.
Well, should we just do a quick title update for where that leaves everything?
Ingram manages to extend his lead in the title by one singular point this weekend, so he's got a 33 point gap going into Brands.
This is the thing that's killing me the most. Camish is back to third on 275. He's now only four clear of Hill on 271.
No.
And Hill is now, I can't do maths very quickly, but he's got a decent gap over Row Bottom, who's back on 257.
It's 14 points.
Thank you. Monumental effort by Hill. That is really, really impressive.
He needed a weekend like this. We know, obviously, how good a weekend he had up in Knockhill, which really did help.
I'm the noise and the sort of lips there was because in the manufacturers, Alliance Ford are back on top,
it's tight
by a point from Virtue, and BMW, they're nowhere near this, this scrap around that. In the teams, on Napa are now on 700. Team Virtue on 697, so again quite close there. In independence drivers, what a weekend this was for Dan Lloyd. He's now top of this of the rankings by 5 points over Mikey Doble. Smiley, dreadful weekend for him. He's now dropped back to 364, so he's now 13 points off the top.
Really hurt him this weekend.
He's going to struggle.
But Restart as a team have managed to take home
provisionally
the independence team title, as you say, provisionally.
And in the Jack Sears, Darrell Leon is he came with his weekend a point or so ahead. He's extended that over Rainford, so he's on 417. Rainford's on 409. Even though Rainford took the weekend, that's what it says here.
Wow, I don't understand how he would have extended that lead, considering Rainford's the winner for the Jack Sears this weekend.
It's all about the places, though, isn't it? Because Osborne would have won race three. We probably should do the maths off air. I can only go with what they've said on here, which is that De Leon's on 417 and Rainford's on 409. That's, I can only go with what they've given me.
I think Rainford has closed the gap, but it is minimal. Absolutely minimal.
I'm sure it was only a couple of points. Was it further?
Yeah.
I'm not sure it was. Anyway, we'll worry about that another time. So, yeah, that leaves... the Jack, and then the Wingfoot. Sorry, just to quickly cover.
Camish is really disappointed by this because he doesn't think he's going to catch Ingram now.
No, 1-3-4 for Ingram, 1-1-8 for Camish.
So. Yeah, I think Camish would need to take pole, and Ingram would need to be
out the points,
like 14th.
Yeah,
for Camish to take that. So yeah,
it might happen. It's unlikely to.
It is.
Right, should we do our awards? Get to the awards. Then do our predictions, then let these good people go back to their lives.
We agree on a couple of them.
We do indeed. Well, we struggled, didn't we, with the driver, because nobody had a standout weekend until I saw a social media post before. Actually, no, you have had the standout
back
weekend.
Out the positions, and with Hill scoring a second, a third, and a fourth, and where he's now bounced back to in that race for third in the championship, I think he certainly deserves driver of the weekend.
I completely agree with you. In terms of the villain?
I'm going for Camish.
Oh, okay. I've gone for his opposite number, so that's fine.
excluded from qualifying, not necessarily his fault, but as a team, you need to work together. Not making much progress in race one because you've got less boost and on the medium tyre. We saw how well Sutton ran on a medium tyre. Yes, he had more boost, but was able to do a lot better with it, I believe. And then, obviously, having that issue as well, it's just a weekend to forget for him.
Agreed. I've gone for Chilton purely because...
He's driving into people.
Yeah, his weekend was sabotaged by none other than Tom Chilton. I think that when you've got such a close championship battle in terms of your teams and your manufacturers, and you've got the other guy struggling in Camish... What's the best thing you can do? Well, I'll struggle with him. It's very much Lando. Lando's had a slow stop, Oscar. Can you please move out the way? Yep. You know, it's... Yeah, he didn't capitalise.
No, he certainly didn't.
Surprise, good.
I've gone for Lloyd.
Yeah, I can see that.
Seeing Lloyd winning a race this weekend.
Nope, I agree.
And if it weren't for, obviously, his difficulties in the final race of the weekend where... He was extricated by a Toyota. I think it would have been a really successful weekend for him. And it feels like his season's coming back to a really nice point and a really good point towards the end of it.
Yeah, particularly if he can go on to win the independents.
And especially with the difficulties he's had this season. Agreed. So it's a weekend he needed.
Agreed. I've gone for Toyota with the new engines. Obviously, Buxton did pretty well to score points anyway, to be fair to him. But those three... I mean, they must be wondering, why didn't we do this sooner? But where would Toyota have been in the championship?
I know.
Because, Shetton, since that engine's gone in, is a different driver. And he obviously took the win under the old engine. We know about the track conditions that helped him do that. But since that's gone in, he's been a different driver.
It will be interesting to see whether this change is the catalyst for drivers staying for next season. We know Toyota have had this history of chopping and changing drivers quite often. We've seen a couple of different drivers come into the team this season. Will they still keep Cook for next year? Don't know. Depends how other things develop. There are certainly rumours surrounding Aaron Taylor-Smith.
He's helped fewer than himself.
Yes. As to whether he will be staying or not, I would suggest probably not. If Toyota can keep hold of a driver like Shedden, yes, he's a former three-time champion. It was a little while ago. but he's getting back to some sort of racing that we would expect him to be competing in.
Cook, Aaron Taylor Swift, and Sheldon look different drivers since that new engine's gone in their car. And you say, if you're Toyota, you just must be. I mean, I'm not suggesting they could have beaten Ingram or Sutton to the title, but no. I mean, I think they'd have a couple of race wins under their belts for sure.
Yeah, certainly.
Your surprise good? Oh, you've done that, sorry. It's surprise bad now. I've gone for only Dan's. Dan Kamish and Dan Rowbottom. Just both had really poor weekends. Okay, problems with the car. I think they didn't look fast, particularly throughout the weekend. I don't think we had the chance to help Sutton out by defending a bit more, you know, aggressively. They didn't do it. Again, I'm not suggesting they punt drive Ingram off the track. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I'm just thinking that, again, I've raised the point before. You go back to Brands Hatch last year, and what helped Hill win the title was Colin Turkington driving
the
in that
widest BMW
and making it impossible for Ingram to get past him, and just saying, no, I'm going to pop this on the apex. You've got to do something special, boy. And Ingram didn't need anything special to get past him this weekend.
Yep. I've gone for Smiley because...
Yeah, I understand that.
Feeling or seeing what Lloyd has done this weekend shows what that car could have done this weekend. And generally throughout this season, Smiley has been the better of the two drivers. I think he'll be really disappointed with how this weekend's fallen for him, especially where it now puts him in the independent driver's title.
I completely agree. Right, let's rattle through these predictions and go for some tea. So,
that because I've taken more points.
No, it's because we're now about 7 hours into this podcast. And to be fair, the main predictions are very easy to do. We both got one right, which was a winner for Ingram.
Yep.
Everything else was wrong. You went for Morgan for pole, I went for Rowbottom. Both were nowhere near it. Right. My race winners were Ingram, Morgan and Smiley, so 1 point there. Your race winners were Ingram and Proctor, so 1 point there. And Charles, you're welcome. We didn't go for you in the Jack Sears. I went for Osborne, you went for De Leon, and somehow... from your math, so we might need to check that given the score in the championship.
It's just typical how that has happened.
Although there'll be a steward.
We never seem to get the Jack Sears.
There will be a steward's inquiry into the points, so to make sure we've definitely got that one correct. In terms of the general predictions, I went for Kamish to outscore Sutton, and to be honest, he might score more points if he stayed at home. I had Ingram to be 45 plus clear at the end of the weekend. I thought Sutton was going to have a stinker. In some ways he did, but not enough to make that prediction come in. And I had Cook to outscore Lloyd and Doble. So just on that, Cook scored 35, Lloyd scored 31, Doble scored 11.
33.
Was it 30? Sure, you are right. Yeah, 33. So Cook just sneaked that in for me, which was very helpful indeed.
I kind of wish you'd gone for them combined now.
And I safety car laps, I went for 5. That was lost in race 1.
Yes,
so,
it was.
Yeah. In terms of your predictions?
Yeah, Ingram scored 40 plus points this weekend.
It was closer than you thought it might be.
It was a little
closer
than I thought it would be. But yeah, taking that win and obviously fastest lap and a leading lap really helped towards that. He scored 42.
Yeah.
We had Sheddon and Aaron Taylor-Smith score both 20 plus points this weekend, although it only just came in that final race where Taylor-Smith took 5 points to take him up to 23 for the weekend. Double podium, we've already spoken about, didn't quite happen. I thought it might have done if he was going to be on a soft tyre, but yeah, that's how the cookie crumbles. And safety car laps, there were so many. I think there were 12 this weekend in total.
Won that quite quick and easy.
And won that quite easily.
So in the prediction table, which is the most important thing now, Ingram has won the championship, is that you now have a 3-point gap at the top. You're on 26 to my 23. There are, of course... Oh, maths again. 9.
Well, let us know now what you want our final prediction of the year to be, our special one. Let us know down in the comments, post it on our social media, message us privately if you want to, and we'll pick the best one for the final weekend, because I think having something completely independent is going to be the best way to decide it.
You're absolutely right. There are, of course, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 points available, unless we do a 3-pointer for the
special.
So potentially 12 points available. So 3 is not insurmountable.
No, it's certainly not. And we have seen bigger swings than that this season already.
Indeed. So we'll have to see what Brands Hatch brings. We'll be watching that on the sofa together. And we're bringing you a preview to that. There in the time.
Yeah, if you want to let us know down in the comments who was your driver of the weekend, how you think the final race weekend is going to pan out at Brands Hatch, and let us know any other thoughts down in the comments.
Until then, until we speak again, rather, goodbye.
Bye-bye.